Alan Franciscus. I am 65. Today is July 9th. We are in Chicago at StoryCorps, and Lucinda is a colleague, a friend, and a hepatitis C advocate.
I'm Lucinda Porter. I'm almost 61. Today is July 9th. I'm at the Chicago Cultural Center recording for StoryCorps. I'm from Grass Valley, California. And I am a co-advocate in the hepatitis C world with Alan Franciscus.
So Lucinda, first question is, tell me your story about how you got into hepatitis C and what led you to become an advocate for hepatitis C.
Well, I didn't get into hepatitis C. Hepatitis C got into me. So in 1988, I was at the lowest of points in my life. I had been saddled with 20 years of severe mental illness, not garden variety depression, but clinical depression that was so debilitating that I'd been hospitalized more than 20 times, sometimes up to 6 months at a time. I had been considered for electroshock therapy. I was on Thorazine. I was a basket case. And that kind of depression is just a horrible burden, and I wanted to die all the time. And finally, after I don't know how many suicide attempts in 1988, I checked into a motel. I took a massive overdose of Tylenol, and I nearly killed myself. I was in multi-organ failure. My liver was completely gone. I was told I had 24 hours left to live and to put my affairs in order. And after a lifetime of living with fear and pain, and knowing that I was going to die, I woke up. I woke up and I thought, I am never going to see this moment again. And I started living in the present. Now, in the same time, I was given blood transfusions, and I didn't know I was acquiring hepatitis C along with it, but I lived, and my life turned around, and mental illness and I parted ways. And about 6 weeks after that incident, I started feeling very tired and got yellow. And they diagnosed me with non-A, non-B hepatitis. Hepatitis C didn't even have a name yet. It would be another year before it would. So I muddled through it and tried to get my life back, the life that I had lost 20 years of, and I went to nursing school. And in the middle of nursing school, I met the first other person I had ever met who had hepatitis C. I was assigned to her, and she was about my age, which at that point was not quite 40, and she was dying. She had cirrhosis from drinking as well as having hepatitis C. And I suddenly realized that hepatitis C might not be a benign thing. It might not be just some transient virus that was going through my body by way of a blood transfusion. So I went to the doctor, and at that point, they said, just don't worry about it. You know, it's no big deal. And that's the course I stayed on for a while. And then when I finished nursing school, there was a shortage of jobs. So I got a very lackluster position at a skilled nursing facility. And when I was there, I was incredibly bored, and I was looking for some meaning in my life. I picked up the newspaper, and I read about a man who had been arrested because he had started a needle exchange site in our town in Northern California. And I was intrigued because not only did it not make any sense to me that he would be arrested in the first place for trying to save people from HIV and hepatitis C, but it sounded to me like he was doing something good and trying to serve humanity. So I went out and I contacted him. I sent him some money and he invited me to visit. So I went out and I met people he was serving, and I realized that everybody had hepatitis C. And I found my tribe. I found people like me who had hepatitis C. Now, they were much sicker than I was because they didn't have the advantages that I had. You know, I had healthcare and food and a home, and I wasn't using drugs, but they really were sick. And I knew something else, and that was that I didn't know anything about hepatitis C, and they didn't know anything, and that I had the opportunity to do something. I could learn about it, and I could help them. So I set about trying to find everything I could about hepatitis C, which at that point was a very small body of knowledge. And I also started a support group. And you know how life is, one thing leads to another. Well, because I did that, the man I was doing the volunteer work for said, well, there's going to be a group of us in the Bay Area who are getting together and we want to make a difference and try to do something, kind of a task force. And so we got together up in the East Bay of near in Oakland, and that's where I met you. And when I met you, my life changed.
So Lucinda, I'm curious. One of the things we hear about hepatitis C is there are no symptoms. Did you have any symptoms when that whole time that you had it?
I didn't. It's more like many people. You find out what the symptoms are and you find out later. And I think that was part of why meeting you changed everything, because suddenly we were talking about it and we compared notes and we found out neither one of us could remember anything. We both had brain fog.
Right.
And we were both tired and everything changed. And I think that it is one of those things that it's like a light bulb when you say, oh, these are the symptoms of hepatitis C. And then you think about what you've gone through. You think, oh, yes, that's what I had. And so, you know, I think it was a reality check that even though I had met other people with hepatitis C, I didn't have the reality check of meeting somebody like you, you know, who was coming from a fairly healthy background, and suddenly you were just really tired, and I was really tired. And so, you know, so you went and you invited me to write for your newsletter. You had started a support group. So to my knowledge, I think we had the only support groups in the Bay Area. And then you thought, well, I want to bring information out to people. And when you asked me, would I write an article? And I had never written. So I thought, well, okay. So I thought it was just going to be a one-time thing. And little did I know that you'd asked me again. And that was in 1998. Is that when the newsletter?
Yes.
So, and I've been writing a monthly article ever since. And you asked me to write some patient pamphlets, and then as a result of having visibility through you and talking in the community, Stanford hired me, and so I got my dream job.
So Lucinda, you touched on, you know, meeting me, and you got very emotional about that. And I think that's a really important point because in our work, I think we meet so many people that we would never have met before. And maybe you can expand on that a little bit about meeting kindred spirits and meeting people that you know, tell stories that we would never have dreamed that we could meet, and people we've become so close to.
I think that's the miracle of contracting a disease and finding out that there are other people with it, because you do have relationships. And one of the, probably all of the fondest memories I have are, and maybe fond isn't the right word, but most meaningful memories are being able to be with others who are struggling and that don't have the information that I have. You know, I have had the luxury of not having to be afraid of hepatitis C, but other people don't. Most of us are afraid. And I think being afraid at first is the appropriate response. But in time, that fear is a huge burden, and sometimes more of a burden than the actual disease. So I remember one time I was working in the Tenderloin in San Francisco, and it was like an underground system of communication, and the word went out that there was a nurse on the street, and I got to go in to back alleys and touch people and just say they're there. I couldn't do much because I was a nurse walking around in San Francisco. It wasn't like I had a mobile van with me or anything. I was there with other community outreach workers, but I got to make a difference for that moment. I got to look in their eyes for that moment, and I got an opportunity to say, yes, I think this needs to be taken care of, or if you do this, this might help. But that's just one story. I mean, the stories of being at people's bedside, I don't think people realize how awful the death is that can accompany hepatitis C. The Tenderloin is a section of San Francisco where the poorest of the poor are, where there's a lot of drugs, there are a lot of sex workers, there are people who live on the edge, the most disenfranchised part of San Francisco, I would say. Yes.
Yes.
And so going back to how the two of you met and the development of your friendship, how do you see you all's friendship as being this most significant part of your life? Because, I mean, you got really emotional, but could you kind of, like, paint a picture of, like, why that was or why that is?
I think that it's many things. First of all, Alan and I are two of the most unlikely people to have been in this work. You know, we're not... You know, we didn't come from the addiction community. We did not come from... Well, I did get a health background, but I certainly didn't envision myself working in the hepatitis C field. And I think that when I met Alan, I found somebody who was like me. I mean, Alan, you're like me. You're like me in ways that I'm not going to publicly say because it would be embarrassing to both of us. But we have the same humor and very sort of adolescent humor, and we're not afraid to laugh. But the other thing is, it's because we've been doing this work for 17 years. I haven't stuck with much. I've stayed married for longer than that, but I haven't stuck with much. And yet I'm still interested. I feel like I'm just starting. And I feel burned out, and I'll just be spending a little time with you, and you talk about how excited you are about this project or that project, or getting very agitated about a particular aspect of this work that is particularly annoying or enraging. And then I'll walk away and I'll just kind of feel like I've gotten rejuvenated, and I think that's the thing, is you help me remember why I'm doing this work. And here we are, we're both cured. I mean, that's the part of our story that I think, or my story, I think both of our stories, that is important to keep in mind. We both went through treatment a number of times, and treatment is very hard, and both of us continued to do advocacy while we were going through treatment.
What kind of effects does treatment have on you emotionally?
Well, it has a number of things. It's a depressant if you're using an interferon-based treatment. It's agitating if you're using one of the other drugs, which I did twice. And it made me feel, it reminded me of being mentally ill. You know, I've been fortunate that I have been in long-term remission from mental illness since 1988. But during treatment, that remission was certainly tested. and I had rage and malaise, and sometimes I didn't care about anything, but yet I still showed up and suited up and did this work because it's why I'm alive. It's why I'm here. You know, I know I'm called to do this work. There's no question in my mind. And if that's, I mean, I don't even think the emotional part of it is, that's only half of it. It's the fatigue and the dry mouth and the mouth sores and no appetite and dizziness and, you know, feeling like if you're going to walk, you can barely walk up a flight of stairs. You can't. I had to take the elevator most of the time. I couldn't walk up the stairs without looking for a place to sit down. And yet now that I'm cured, I don't feel like I need to quit. In fact, I need to stay in it even more.
Excuse me. Don't you think that now that these newer therapies that I think that is one of the reasons we have even more passion now, because we do have therapies that are so much more effective and that everybody can be treated now.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. And it's easier, although it still blows me away that people are still afraid of treatment. You know, I understand people are distrustful of medicine, but part of me also says, you know what? It's so much easier. And, you know, people think, well, you know, if they don't, they might think they don't have symptoms from hepatitis C. I've got news for you. People probably do. They just are attributing it to other things. And then even people without advanced disease think, well, I don't need to worry about it. I'm not very advanced. But they forget that hepatitis C claims an earlier mortality rate. You know, people die 15 years earlier from hepatitis C, from all causes of diseases. They're not dying directly from hepatitis C. They're dying from heart disease, cancer, stroke. And we're only measuring the deaths from hepatitis C. And yet here we are. We're sitting in 2014. We're sitting right where we were in the 1980s during the Reagan years, where people were turning their backs on people who are dying from AIDS. You know, HIV was clearly stealing the best of our young people, and we turned our backs on them. Well, we're doing the same damn thing here with hepatitis C. We're turning our backs on everyone, and Congress is wrestling over what's basically pennies for funding for the Viral Hepatitis Act. Well, we don't have that kind of time. We have people dying, and health care is a right. It's not the fact that we had to legislate for it is just crazy. Just like legislating for votes and legislating for civil rights. That's crazy. These are basic human rights.
And especially since we're the richest country in the world, you would think it would be different.
You would. And so here we are, 2014. And how do we make a difference? You know, every day I wake up and I say, how can I make a difference? My prayer is, use me. Use me. That is all I want to do. And so that's, sometimes it's just talking one-on-one. I play a little game with myself. Whether I'm on an airplane or I'm at a cocktail party that I can't drink at because I don't drink anymore, but the game is this. I find out in how few sentences it will take me to bring a conversation around getting someone to consider being tested for hepatitis C. You know, this is a baby boomer's disease. And granted, we have a lot of younger people that have it, and we have people of all ages that have it. But 50% or more of baby boomers have yet to be tested for hepatitis C, so they don't know that they have it. And when I tell people that I have hepatitis C, my job at that point is, now, if you were born from 1945 through 1965, have you been tested? Now, when I tell them I have hepatitis C, their next question is, well, how did you get it? I don't like answering that question. I don't like answering it because it's a conversation stopper. Because if I say I got it from a blood transfusion, they'll think, oh, shoo, okay, now I don't have to worry. But I want them to think, well, maybe I got it when I had a manicure. Or maybe that shared straw use when I did Coke in 1989 might have done it. Or maybe I, you know, whatever. I want them to start asking those questions. And maybe they did only use Coke once in 1989. But I want them to have that seed planted. And so I just say, it's not how you lived, it's when you lived. You know, it's straightforward. You don't have to ask if you have a risk factor. You just ask what year you were born and then get tested, period.
So what do you want people to know about hepatitis C? What would be that fact or facts you'd want people to know?
Well, that it's curable. And that, you know, we're sitting where we were with smallpox. We're looking at the potential for wiping out a disease on our planet. So I would like them to get tested first and then to get treated if they have the means, you know, because insurance doesn't always cover it. But if they don't have the means, possibly to consider lifestyle changes. And one of the most amazing benefits that I received from hepatitis C was I found out I had it early. So that allowed me the opportunity not to drink anymore, not to use drugs, not to abuse my body, to eat better than the breakfast I ate today, but that's another story. It allowed me to exercise every day, to meditate, to make healthier choices. I didn't do that overnight, but I did that gradually, and I think that helped me. It helped me get to this point.
Can you talk about your process with accepting your disease and what that meant about being able to take care of your body and any challenges you had with making these positive adaptations?
I think that it was easier for me to accept that at that time in my life than it might have been otherwise, because after 20 years of debilitating mental illness, hepatitis C was a walk in the park. And that when I knew that I was going to die within 24 hours and that I didn't, and I got a life back, getting a life back with hepatitis C felt like a bargain. But one thing that hepatitis C has given me, and I think in many ways the near-death experience, is I'm gentle with myself. I don't see the point of harsh retribution. I don't beat myself up. So, okay, yes, today I had a nice flaky biscuit for breakfast. Well, that I'm not regretting that. Life is too short for regrets and for celery sticks. And I am really trying to be kind to myself, love my neighbor and myself. It doesn't do me any good to love somebody else and not to also love myself. So the process has been fits and starts. I fall off the wagon from time to time, and I'm not talking about the drinking wagon. I've been sober a long time, but I am talking about the health wagon in general. So some days I don't exercise the way I'd like to, and some days I don't eat the way I'd like to. But as it was said by Tara in Gone with the Wind, tomorrow's another day or something like that. I have no idea what she really said.
Well, to me it sounds a lot like harm reduction. Is that are you a big proponent of harm reduction for people with hepatitis C?
I am. I don't believe in shooting the wounded. Every day we get one precious life, as Mary Oliver, the poet, said. And so I don't believe in shooting people when they're down. I don't understand why we can't get clean needles to people and clean syringes and safe drug use and services to help those who are struggling. Basic health care. I mean, people are dying. You know, the fact that more people die from this than HIV apparently is not enough to get Congress excited to sign off on funding for viral hepatitis testing. But I've sat with so many people and I've watched their pain, and I wish Congress could do that. I wish I could put all the patients that I've walked through their lives with, I wish I could take them and put them in front of Congress. You know, we were talking about stories earlier. I was thinking about this one woman. She was terrified of treatment, but she had cirrhosis and she was going to die. And at that time, it was the most grueling treatment, and cirrhosis, patients with cirrhosis were very unlikely to clear hepatitis C. But she went ahead because she didn't know what else to do. And it was hard. And about in her fifth month, her husband, who was her caretaker, didn't feel well. And he went to the doctor and he had liver cancer. And he died a month after the diagnosis. And they had not been married for very long. And they were both in their 60s. She was about 62 and he was about 64. And she lost her medical insurance as a result of his death. And she lost their house as a result of their death, of his death. And she lost all income. Nothing was in her name. And yet she completed treatment. And that was so amazing. And she cleared. And I said to her at one point, how is it that you're able to complete this treatment with all those side effects? And she said, well, after you've lost your house, your husband, your income, you've lost everything, and you've found what is really important, then you can do anything. And I carry that with me. I think of how lucky I am because I do have a husband. I do have a lovely family, and I haven't lost everything. But because I haven't lost everything, I feel like it's my responsibility to help those who have lost more than I have.
So what's the worst thing about having hepatitis C?
I think the stigma is, particularly for those who have a history of injection drug use, because hepatitis C is isolating because it's potentially infectious, and we just don't like sick people. We don't want to have conversations about illness. We just try to put distance between us. But injection drug users are particularly stigmatized because people think they brought it on themselves. And that, to me, is the most irrational, ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. Like, you know, it's just because somebody struggles with a disease of injection of drug using doesn't mean that they brought something on themselves, particularly brought a potentially deadly virus. You know, I have been fortunate in that I haven't been highly stigmatized, but I have been publicly criticized on Facebook for having put patients at risk. Now, I know I've never put patients at risk. I've always been public about having hepatitis C. And Stanford hired me knowing that I was going to be public about it. But patients become insecure, and people without hepatitis C are quick to raise the fear alarm. And so one man just basically said that I was a serial killer, that I was putting patients at risk by working as a nurse. And that was hard to hear because it was wrong.
What was your response to that?
I chose not to respond because I figured he was sicker than I was. And there's no response to that. I think the hardest part was other people rose to my defense, and I didn't like that because I don't need defending. And I just thought he looked pretty sick to me to have to put that on. But I felt bad for those other patients who worried. You know, I know a lot of people in healthcare have hepatitis C, and they are not out of the closet. They're afraid to. I get emails so many times from dentists and doctors and nurses, and they say, if anybody found out, I'm afraid I'll lose my job. And they could. It's illegal, but they could. You know, they can always find a way to get rid of you. And if you're living in a place like, you know, in the interior in a small town, you know, such as I've heard of people disenfranchised, you know, basically they said I could be ostracized from my town in the Midwest. It's sad.
It's very sad. So tell me, Lucinda, what's good about having hepatitis C, if there is anything good about having hepatitis C?
Oh, my. It has been a gift for me, obviously, because I got my health out of it. I'm alive. I got a career. I met you. I got to do meaningful work. I get to sit here today and tell my story. You know, hepatitis C keeps me, it's like having a coach in my head saying, put your sneakers on, go to the gym, put down the fork. You know, it's just constantly saying, you're alive today. You're alive today. And you're alive today because you made healthy choices. You're alive today because of a miracle. You know, I think if I didn't have hepatitis C, I might have been a hopeless drunk somewhere and drank myself into alcoholic cirrhosis. But I'm not. I got to know that I had this visitor. People fight against having the virus, and they really push up against it. But I don't push up against it. I welcome it in. Like, what are you going to teach me? And now that it's gone, I'm delighted. But I don't want to forget the memory of it. I don't want to forget that for a long time, a virus was replicating in my liver a trillion times a day. And now that it's gone, I want to keep my liver clean, and I want to help others.
Lucinda, what did going through treatment, curing your body of it, what did it teach you about yourself?
That anything is possible. Anything is possible. It is, and that I am strong, and that I am fearless, and that I'm not alone. I did this because I had partners, other advocates, other patients. It's amazing to me how many of my patients would just cheer me on while I was going through treatment. You know, I had cheered them on, and now it was their turn. And I was so grateful to be the vulnerable one, to walk in their shoes and to know what they were experiencing, and that I could just get a little more insight into what it was like to be a hepatitis C patient.
You talk about being the one who is vulnerable. Can you expand on that a little bit and its impact or what it taught you now that you are cured about vulnerability?
I think vulnerability is about being authentically human. You know, I don't have to hide behind answers. I don't have to hide behind a facade of having been cured of hepatitis C. I can always be open. I think it's about vulnerability is more about looking at someone else and seeing their humanity. You know, I like that saying, you know, namaste. We hear it in this country, but I was in India, and everywhere I went, someone would bow to me, and I would bow back, and we would say namaste. And that means the God in me honors the God in you. And I think of it more of the human in me honors the human in you. So when I'm vulnerable, I'm human. And when I'm not vulnerable, I'm that other kind of human, but not the kind of human that is open to hearing and opening to listening and that is open to knowing that you might be suffering. And when I'm open, it invites you to share your suffering. And then we can carry it together. But if we don't carry it together, it's a burden. But that's the thing about hepatitis C advocacy work, is we're all carrying this virus together. We're not walking around alone with a virus chomping away at our liver and eating away at our future.
So tell me, Lucinda, you've been talking a lot about all of these miraculous things happening, but have you experienced any miracles in Hep C?
I think that the miracle is that we have a cure that is easier for everyone to take. You know, it's here now, but in October it's going to get even better. And then after that, it'll get even better. The treatment is short. And we have a chance to give lives back to people and say to them, you know what? You might not have to die of liver cancer. You might not have to die from liver cirrhosis. You might not have to walk around feeling debilitating fatigue and have a cloudy brain. You might be able to start thinking straight. That's a miracle. It's like, again, like smallpox. We watched that, and polio, you know, in my generation, you know, we saw people affected by polio. Well, they don't have that as much now. Most of us are older. Well, there might come a day that hepatitis C will be gone for everyone. We might not see it. You know, it's sort of like that biblical story of Moses in the Holy Land. You know, I can see the Holy Land. I may not be able to live in a country that's completely free of hepatitis C, but I can see it.